Welcome to episode 2 of the Paddock Scout podcast with myself, Peter Allen, Valentin Horungi, and David Grizz. With speculation continuing about the 2014 Formula 1 driver lineup, we're going to look at the drivers on the books of the F1 teams who could feature next year, or maybe in the more distant future. While Sergei Sorokin looks set to race for Sauber next year, the other youngster most likely to make the step up is Antonio Felix da Costa, in place of Daniel Ricciardo at Toro Rosso. The Red Bull Junior team has produced Vettel, Ricciardo, and Jean-Éric Vergne, and although Felix da Costa is theoretically the next in line, there has been a bit of hesitation, hasn't there?
Yeah, it could say so, certainly. For instance, there were some rumours, and I think Helmut Marko didn't explicitly deny that they were looking at the possibility of signing Felipe Nasr from Carlin's GP2 squad. But I think, after all, after da Costa's more recent performances, because his campaign sort of came alive in the second half of the World Series by Renault season, I suspect, from what I heard, the deal is done already. So I think we're going to have him as a Formula One driver next year.
Yeah, I could see why there was hesitation, because he wasn't on form, and I think it would have sent the wrong message to hand him the contract while he wasn't on form. But he's added a couple of wins since.
I suspect it never was really in danger from the way Red Bull operate. Just, you know, trying to put pressure on their own drivers with PR games and all that. And I think, and with da Costa, I almost thought it wasn't quite working, because there were, like, I think one of the latest races before he started winning again, I think he ruined his own race in the first lap.
Hungary, yeah.
Yeah, and that's when Remy told me that he thought that's where he lost the Scuderia Toro Rosso seat. But he's rebounded after all, and really, it's not like the Red Bull Junior team have anybody else to take. And obviously he's deserved the shots. We rated him as our top driver in 2012.
So. I think he was, after the end of last year, he was just expected too much from himself, and it was expected also by everyone to win this Formula Renault 3.5 very easily, and it just didn't happen, and everybody was a little surprised.
Yeah, it was a bit overrated, wasn't he, in a way?
Yeah, I think I said at the end of last year, you know, he's capable of what he did there, but he's had a habit of having very quiet seasons as well, and I think I said he needs to make sure that he nails it this year.
I mean, many people do forget he did not win the GP3 season after all, despite, you know, achieving several milestones, like he was the first GP3 driver to win both races in a weekend, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't win it. And maybe, you know, maybe that's the fault of the machinery. The Carlin GP3 squad is hardly the strongest one out there. But, like, if you think that this guy is better than anybody else who you have in the junior single seat is, then maybe you'd expect him to completely dominate a series such as a GP3. He didn't. That's why you can't really, like, he has some streaks of really good form, and I think one of those streaks is going on right now, and we'll see whether it continues at the final round of Catalunya. The championship is already mathematically gone, but I think he'll probably show, he'll have a good showing, and then they'll probably unveil the contract. So he deserved it. Is he the next big thing? Well, we'll see how he does in Formula One, I guess.
Yep. When the pressure was on, they also mentioned their two drivers in GP3, Sainz and Kvyat, didn't they? A lot of people have tried to say that, you know, they deserve a chance, because obviously Kvyat's been doing quite well, but it's not. It's too early, isn't it?
It's way too early. In fact, I think that was just a way of putting pressure on Felix da Costa by his, you know, supervisors, because they don't have anybody quite there in line that can pressure him. And Red Bull, the way Red Bull Junior team operate is that they don't seem to like when there's no other counterpoint to put pressure on a driver. That's why, you know, Red Bull Juniors usually come in pairs. You think Red Bull Juniors, you think Alguersuari Buemi, you think Vern Ricciardo. And Felix da Costa was kind of by himself. He was picked up just last year. So I think that's where the Sainz Kvyat rumors came in. They're both exceptional drivers, especially Kvyat, in my opinion, but they're not ready. They're nowhere near ready. even Valtteri Bottas had, you know, a year of testing, 15 practice, free practice session after GP3, and Kvyat and Sainz are even kind of less ready than that. There's no way they can make their Formula One debut in 2014. No way.
So what do we think about how Sainz and Kvyat compare? Because I know I personally always back Sainz in a way.
Yeah, I personally always back Kvyat, and that really has not much to do with the nationality. I know in the early seasons it was kind of obvious that Sainz was the more capable one, but his developmental curve hasn't been quite as impressive. And if you see Kvyat's showings in European F3, not just, because in GP3 his advantage over Sainz is very much not just down to, you know, not just down to being better or anything, it's down to luck.
Yeah, it's been a lot of luck, because Sainz would be a lot closer had he not, I mean, he put it on pole ahead of Kvyat in Spa.
Yeah, but then there's lots of first corner stuff for him, and there was the Jack Harvey incident.
Yeah.
And then Sainz generally, I think, is a bit more incident prone, if you will. So it's a bit hard to judge whether he's quicker or not. But you've seen Sainz in European F3 last year, where he was nothing special, let's be honest. And Kvyat this year in European F3 is something special. And they've tested Sainz in Euro F3, and I can only guess that they didn't go there again is because maybe he wasn't very good in that car. So I think in that, like, Kvyat might be a bit more versatile. I think at this point Kvyat is probably the more exciting prospect, but it's very close, obviously. Both of them are very, very good drivers for the future.
Yeah, and Sainz's problem is getting results. He remains very talented. He shows every time he gets in a different kind of car, he drives it ridiculously quickly, really quick, you know, immediately.
For the practice sessions, and then problems start, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we saw that last year in British Formula 3. We saw that last year in the F3 Euro Series. He would look like one of the title contenders in the beginning. And really, it happened the same year in GP3.
Yeah.
And I suspect it's going to happen the same way in Formula Renault 3.5, where both he and Kvyat were excruciatingly quick in postseason testing. Like, way too quick for people who have not done this level of racing before.
Sainz's F1 test was ridiculously good. I mean, that's not just us sitting here looking at times, because that's quite difficult to do, but it's definitely what you hear from the paddock as well.
Yeah, if you hear that, like, two drivers are really impressed, maybe three. Magnussen, but that's, you know, that's Collado and Sainz.
Yeah.
All right, do we move on to the other Red Bull juniors?
Yeah, we can do.
There are three other. We mentioned three. There are six overall, so that leaves European F3's Tom Blomqvist.
I think Blomqvist is mostly there because of his name, because he had a successful father, because he started his career with a success. He won Formula UK at the age of 15, but ever since, he had spent 3 years in Formula 3, and none of them were really impressive. I know he had a big accident, but still, I don't know why Red Bull keeps him.
Yeah, I think he's been a bit, he hasn't had, since he won the Formula Renault title, he hasn't had a good package underneath him, to be honest. I mean, German F3, possibly he did, but obviously he got that injury. But I think he was generally disappointed with how that season went. I don't think there's much of an argument there. But last year he was thrown in, well, because, yeah, down to lack of budget, he got something together with Marcon on the eve of the season. Marcon hadn't tested the car before the first round. And it was brand, you know, it was the brand new F3. Mm-hmm.
Well, with Marcon, even like Emil Bernstorff, who is no slouch, couldn't really score that many points. Struggled a lot. So, and Lundqvist comfortably beat the guy.
He got a lot better as the season went on, as well as, yeah, as they got more used to it. So it was nice to see the Red Bull chance, but they've put him with Euro International now. That makes sense to a degree, because he's done well with Euro International before, and Red Bull have done well with Euro International before, back in Formula BMW and other things, probably. But But they didn't do European F3 last year, so they're new to the F3-12. And then they don't give him a teammate. Blomqvist has been completely on his own apart from one weekend.
Where he was pardoned by Nick Cassidy.
Yeah.
Who actually had a decent showing and showed that the car isn't that bad, but it's not certainly not good enough to go out there and fight for victories at the front of the grid.
No. I mean, Blomqvist is losing to what? The three Prima guys? Well, the Prima car is ridiculously far ahead.
Yeah, the one Muka guy.
Yeah, who's doing well.
And the Carlins.
And the Carlins, yeah, who again...
And maybe the Vortex, sort of, in a way. Like, he's probably one of the best independent-ish teams that don't have, like, four car lineups. But that still leaves a lot of drivers in front of him.
But you get the feeling he's probably not going to stay on, you know, because... I mean, he's going to Vortex to do Macau. And in the press release, there was no mention of him being a Red Bull Junior or anything. So, I'm suspicious. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did drop him after this, even though he's not had a fair crack at it, to be honest.
Yeah, that would not be particularly fair, but Red Bull works in mysterious ways. And then there's their lower-level contingent on the ladder in ADAT's Formal Masters with the Motopark squad. That would be the Dutch driver, Bates Kivisa, and the South African driver, Callan O'Keefe. Now, Motopark has not been as strong as you would expect in ADAT's Formal Masters. Their four-car lineup is struggling quite a bit, and they can't really fight with the likes of Muke and Neuhauser and even Ralf Buschen from Team KUG. But in general... neither of them had seasons that impressive. Like, O'Keefe is easily the weakest Motopark driver by quite a bit. While Visser is probably the strongest, but is having trouble securing really good results. Visser had a really good rookie season in ADAT's Formal Masters, which got her signed into the junior team. And O'Keefe had a stellar rookie year in cars in the Talent Cup. But they've kind of underperformed. Now, I don't think Visser is going anywhere because, well, she has shown very good pace on most occasions. And she does have that rather rare nowadays quality of being a female driver that doesn't really get up the ladder because she's a female. Like, this is actually a very legitimately talented female driver who can make it up the ladder on merit. So I don't see Red Bull getting rid of her. O'Keefe, it's a bit more difficult because Red Bull isn't very nice when it comes to karting graduates. They tend to keep him on for a year and then dispose of him, like Alex Albon, who we'll talk about later. And I don't know if he has a future with the Red Bull Junior team. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I don't know if he brings any other benefits in any way other than pure ability. If it is pure ability, I think his time will probably be up because he's had 2 years now and it's not quite worked. I think if he was on his own in ADAC Formula Masters, he might look at, you know, he might be able to blame the car. But he has been beaten by Visser fairly.
Has been beaten by Visser and by Dante and their second year drivers. But he has been beaten by Mikkel Jensen from Denmark, quite noticeably so, too. And Jensen is another rookie. So there's really not much of an excuse there. His points finishes really have been few and far between, and I don't see him being kept on. You have to wonder whether they will actually take somebody from the Formula BMW Talent Cup this year, because that's sort of been their practice. And that hasn't really worked out that well for them, though, because... last time when they took Stefan Meckerbauer, who was really good in the Talent Cup, they took him on and they put him straight into the Eurocup Formula Renault, and he finished 11th, which, you know, for a rookie year, that's fine. But he was put with, you know, Kvyat was also in that lineup, and Kvyat finished, was it third?
Second, yeah.
Second, you sure?
Yeah. To Van Dorn.
Oh, right. Yeah, I guess he stayed on another year. Yeah, that's true. So Kvyat finishes second, and I'm guessing he was much more impressive than Meckerbauer, which makes sense. And Red Bull dropped him, and now he's sort of on that level struggling without any funding of his own. He keeps, you know, he keeps popping up for rounds with teams, usually not even managing to secure a deal. It's really kind of unfortunate. You have to wonder just how well that, just how humane that tactic is, if you like.
And last year they also had an eye on Pierre Gasly. They were sponsoring him, and they certainly had an eye on him. And he finished 10th, also as a rookie, and they decided not to take him on. And that looks a bit daft now.
Yeah, that looks, no, that looks really daft. You have to wonder whether maybe Gasly hasn't agreed to it himself. There's always a chance, but...
That's possible, yeah.
Yeah. And Gasly has been doing marvelous this year, so it wouldn't be a surprise if they reevaluate their choice at the end of the year. So we move on to other less controversial, if you like, Formula One Junior Academies. Let's move on to Lotus, who also have quite a sizable junior roster, starting with, well, the man of the moment, the man we just profiled, Esteban Ocon.
Yeah, Ocon has been pretty impressive in the Euro Cup this year. He's, what, only still 17? Barely 17? Second year of single-seaters, and he's third in the Euro Cup. Most of the guys around him are in third seasons of single-seaters now, and older than 17. And he's finally... I mean, it took him a while to get his win last weekend, but...
And it was a peculiar win. It wasn't quite on pace, but it was a very, very, very strong drive in extremely difficult conditions where he managed to come from behind of similar strategy, Jake Dennis, and take the win in the final few laps. I mean, that's very impressive in a field such as, you know, the Euro Cup field. Especially considering that Gasly and Rowland were there in that very same strategy and they couldn't put up a fight to Ocon. Now, we've had maybe a bit of a... I've had, personally, a bit... My expectations of Ocon were a bit huge ahead of this year because of his testing form, which was just straight-up impeccable. And he hasn't quite delivered on that, but at the same time... His performance has been extremely impressive for his level of experience. And we kind of know his next year plans from what Autosport and other sources mentioned, that the next step should be European Formula 3. He just tested with Prema. In European F3, where he comfortably beat pretty much everybody who he tested with, and that includes Kirchhoffer, that includes Bonifacio. Very impressive. So I guess we're expecting him to move there next year. And if he moves there, he might as well take it to the title.
Yeah, I mean, that might be a bit tough in his first year if someone like Lucas Auer stays on. But, you know, it'll be a two-year project for sure.
No, if he wins it in the first year, it won't be a two-year project. That could happen. I mean, probably won't, but he'll probably be more content with just dominating the rookie classification there. The championship is introducing, but so it's a peculiar move because it kind of seems a little sideways, but at the same time, maybe it's rather wise of Lotus not to rush him into a Formula Renault 3.5 seat.
Yeah,
kind of finding something, you know, up and to the left, you'd say, or something like that. So yeah, Ocon is probably at the moment the most promising Lotus driver, but Lotus have two other people in the Euro Cup. That would be Oscar Tunio and Alex Albon. What do you know about them, guys?
Tunio's now, what is it, his third season of Euro Cup now, but he came in very, like Ocon, very young at 15 or 16 or something. And he's always looked decent, hasn't he? But without really being at the front.
Never that spark, never that standout performance, but, you know, extremely competent at all times, pretty much, which is worth something. So, and I think he sponsors the junior team rather well. I think he is important to the marketing-wise in the South American market. So, Tunio is a very, very useful asset for them. The other one is Alex Albon,
Yeah, they picked him up when he was dropped by Red Bull. Ullmann was backed by Red Bull through karting, and then they took him up to some single-seaters, and he had a very difficult first year in Formula Renault. But Lotus have picked him up, and he's had a much better year. I think he's still, as last year, I think he's not with the best of teams in KTR, but...
Yeah, but at least he's not that far off of his rather good teammate, Ignacio de Gusto. Yep. So he's doing fine. He had a pole position start. I mean, that I think he was penalized for something in that race, so he didn't get to.
I think he jumped the start, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He was still very impressive in the rest of the race. He pulled away from the rest of them.
Yeah. So the guy might be heading somewhere.
He's got commercial advantages as well because he's half Thai, and so he seems to be backed by the Thai tourism people. So I think that will be an advantage to keep him on side as well.
Also, a Lotus Junior, Alex Fontana, who just made his debut at the wheel of an F1 car, I believe.
Yep. He's been in GP3 this year, but he's been struggling slightly, but then the Genza team have been. Fontana was a bit of a surprising recruit to the Lotus Junior setup, as far as I was concerned. He's a decent driver, for sure, but he's not one of those, you know, the ultra special ones that you'd necessarily pick out. And I didn't think he had a lot of funding either, but they've given him a good chance. They've given him this F1 test as well, so the future looks like he's got, you know, they've got future plans for him for sure, so he might be in World Series next year.
Yeah, you'd expect him there, certainly. I mean, because of the GP3 campaign, really, I don't know, maybe they could try to find an ART seat for him in GP3. That would sort of make sense, and I guess...
Yeah.
A driver of that level in an ART would turn automatic title contender.
Yep.
So that could be his, you know, big test year, but they could just put him in World Series and see if he adapts, because he was already at the Formula 2 level. And you can make the move from that to 3.5. It's not impossible. Zanella has done it. And then there's the Charouz, the Lotus Charouz lineup, both of who are Lotus Juniors. That would be Marco Sorensen, who we, I think, talked about at length here. And that would be Marlon Stockinger. Now, David, what do you think about the year Stockinger has had so far? Because he's been a bit under the radar compared to his teammate, but he's been making a rather difficult jump from GP3.
In general, Stockinger's whole career has been nothing special. But he also has the big advantage that he's from the Phillip Islands. And it can bring a whole new market of Formula One, maybe, or the motorsports. He had one good part of last year when he won in Monaco, and maybe that caught Lotus's attention. But ever since the second half of GP3, and especially this rookie season in Formula 3.5, they're struggling. Team, he just couldn't really make anything special.
Yeah, that is pretty much true, but he has been noticeably improving alongside Marco.
Yeah,
sort of in a way.
As the team improved, then his performance also improved. But
yeah,
still.
But he's been making it to the points, which is pretty
good.
All right, yeah. So, Lotus, we're obviously very positive about their single-seated efforts, and I do believe they have somebody in karting as well.
Yeah, Dorian Boccolacci.
Now, what about him?
Well, he's a karting prodigy. There's nothing much to talk about him. We will see how well he's going to be in cars, but so far he looks very promising.
So, big thumbs up from us to Lotus, I guess. And from Lotus, we would move on to the Ferrari Driver Academy. Which officially has two people, both of them Italians. The European Formula 3 standings leader, Raffaele Martiello, and the Formula Renault 2.0 Alps near champion, Antonio Fuoco. Now, we talked about Martiello before, but since then he had the weekend in Zandvoort, and I'll let you guys take that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a surprise to have seen him now, what, 9 points? Only 9 points ahead of Rosenqvist because he went...
9.5, yeah.
Okay. He was so far ahead earlier in the year and so impressive. And all he's taken is a couple of, well, yeah, a couple of poor weekends at most.
Exactly, two, pretty much. If you like, the Red Bull Ring weekend was a disaster, and then the Sandvoort weekend was somehow an even bigger disaster. Well, there was, you know, he isn't, like, the luckiest driver on the grid. He's had one win taken away post-race. But back then, it didn't, like, really matter because his points advantage was so huge. Right now, it's mostly gone. He's obviously a very talented driver. He's very, very exciting. He's very competent at the lead of the race. When things don't quite go his way, that's when it starts to fall apart a bit. Like, he's not very capable of fighting through the grid and that kind of stuff. But obviously a very good prospect for Ferrari. You have to see how he does at the next level. Next year is for the title. Well, next round they have Vallelunga, which is as good as Prema's home turf. So despite the 9.5, I think he should still be the champion this year. And we've heard that Ferrari are considering putting him in DTM, I believe, alongside GP2 or World Series by Renault?
Yep, seems to be the plan, with their reasoning being that DTM is quite professional, it's easier how to work with a professional team, etc. Which I can kind of see.
Now, how can we, like, can we really evaluate that choice? Does it, because as a single-seater, you know, as us being the single-seater guys, doesn't really make that much sense to us from what people say about how different a DTM machine is to...
Yeah, they don't... Yeah, their reasoning isn't to do it on a driving side of things, because, yeah, as you say, there's no... GP2 or 3.5 is going to be much better from a driving point of view, but it's just from the way that the teams work, and it's quite similar to F1 in that way.
Maybe it's just a prerequisite of being in European F3, which has sort of become this, you know... Well, it always has been this DTM feeder series, but that hasn't really changed, it looks like. As both of the leading duo are sort of considering a DTM move now. From Marcello, the other Italian, is Antonio Fuoco, and I believe this was his first year in single-seaters?
Yep.
And he's already performed way beyond expectations, isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, his karting record was good, but he's not someone you would have pointed out as being mega. But being Italian, Ferrari decided to evaluate him probably alongside a number of other Italians at their own test track with a Formula Bath car, and presumably he did very, very well indeed. Judging by how well he's done in Alps, we can probably guess he went very well. You know, he's clearly very good in cars, and that's what's most important at the end of the day. You know, you can sign up the karting world champion if you want, but there's no guarantee he'll be any good in cars, so you need to test them in cars and see who's going to be best in a car.
Indeed, and Foucault's... Obviously, he has one of the best cars, if not the best car, in Alps. He has a Prema machine, and Prema have been dominating that championship, but he has two very, very competent and single-seaters teammates. And he's been a lot stronger than both of them. He's, why call him a near champion, he's 1 point away from sealing the title, which might happen in the next few hours, over the final two races of the season. So next year, from what I understood, he's likely to move to FIA F3?
Yeah, that seems to be the plan. So they'll only do one season in Formula Renault. I mean, they could put him in the Eurocup, but they're going to put him straight onto F3.
I think they don't think the Prema in the Eurocup isn't strong enough for a proper title challenge, I guess.
Perhaps, yeah.
And in a 5-3, he's probably not going to be able to challenge for the title his first year, but again, that rookie classification is a possibility, even though Ocon might come in and that's going to be rather impossible. But still, you can expect really good things of Foco. He's a future star for sure.
Let's not forget another Ferrari Academy driver. With Lance Stroll, still karting. He's not having extremely good results, but he's also at the front wherever he's racing, so we might see him in a couple of years in cars too.
So we move on to McLaren. and McLaren's junior drivers have sort of been at the forefront of everybody's attention recently.
Yep, Kevin Magnussen and Stoffel Vandoorne have been, you could almost go as far as to say, dominating the Formula 1 3.5 series this year. Very impressive, both of them. Ridiculously impressive, to be honest. Vandoorne has obviously stepped up from Eurocup to Lita, where he was champion last year. And sort of, if we, I'm afraid we have to compare him to Robin Freins last year, as a Eurocup graduate, driving the same Fortec car. And he's been right up there. He was leading the championship for a while. Unfortunately, he's had a couple of tough weekends, or certainly one in Spielberg, and that's dropped him away from Magnussen, but there's no shame in finishing second for him at all. And he's been very impressive on occasion as well. His Moscow double win was, you know, the most impressive weekend of the season.
It was very, very dominant, and I think, like he said, some sort of World Series record in that regard. The fact that he's won both races, led every lap, put in the fastest laps of the race.
And he's also the first driver since Robert Kubica who won his first ever race in the championship.
Oh wow. That's interesting. The first, well, apart from the person who won the first race.
Yeah, and that was Kubica, so.
Oh.
So actually, Vandoorne is the first ever racer who
did
that.
That's really impressive. Well, we've talked at great length about Vandoorne and Magnussen. They're obviously, like, Magnussen is probably going to be somewhere very close to Formula One next year, either in a race seat or in a very involved test driver role. Vandoorne, I honestly haven't heard.
He could well just do another season in 3.5. I think that's probably best.
Well, that year's over, then.
Yeah.
Yeah, we said that last year with Decost.
Well, no, this is a bit different. But yeah. So, and McLaren, the buck doesn't stop there for them. They also have Nyck de Vries, who was touted as the next big prodigy for McLaren, the next Lewis Hamilton, if you will. And this season has gone rather badly for him so far.
Yeah, last year went pretty well for a rookie Formula Renault season. He
very well, actually, yeah.
He was right up there in the final standings. So this year he came in as the title favourite, I think, really, sort of, with Oliver Rowland, but it's not gone to plan at all. But I think, you know, he's been off the pace for the first half of the season anyway. But I think all along it kind of looked as though it might be the team, because he was still beating his two teammates, and they're decent.
Yeah.
And sure enough, in Hungary, he got himself back up the front. He took a podium and a win. And then he was up there again in Paul Ricard last weekend.
Yeah. So I've heard some rumors that he would be dropped at the end of the year going by his first half, but since he's improved so drastically, probably he's going to get more of a chance in 2014. No idea where he goes, though. I mean,
yeah, I mean, he can probably do another season in Eurocup, but at the same time, he could probably move on. But yeah, you'd be pretty foolish to drop him, because you don't want to drop him and then find someone else picks him up and he's beggar. So he's worth keeping hold of, regardless, really.
Well, that's really it for McLaren. From McLaren, we move on to Force India. We don't really have much of an academy in single-seaters, I believe.
No one in single-seaters yet, but they started up.
Well, kind of James Collado, you would say.
We'll touch on him a bit later. But they started up an academy for Carters a couple of years back. And the main product of that has been, I'm going to try and pronounce his name right, Johan Daravula. And he's been doing really well in international karting. He's done well in the British Championship. He's been fighting the best of the British drivers. And yeah, he's been doing things internationally as well. He was Asia Pacific KF3 champion last year. And he's continued to do well this year, I believe.
We can touch on Mercedes, I guess, even though they don't really have a junior single-seater academy in the traditional sense. But they have a very, very impressive junior contingent in the DTM, isn't that right?
Basically, Mercedes just picked a lot of drivers who were successful in single-seaters but didn't have the money or just didn't want it to continue in a bigger series. So this Mercedes DTM squad is just five young drivers, and there's one Gary Paffett. And probably the biggest potential is with Robert Wickens, who's the World Series by Renault champion. And he had some championship title hopes this year in his second DTM season, which is quite rare in here.
Yeah, Wickens certainly has some unfinished business in the single seat scene, I would say. I mean, he was almost a Formula One driver before he was outbidded by Charles Pick.
Yes.
But he's been extremely impressive in the DTM, and it makes sense for him to stay on. But at the same time, he's very special in the single-seater scene. We would probably like to see him have another stab at that. Vettori has obviously, he's a DTM man for Mercedes, so he's not coming back. The others, very hard to tell. It's hard to tell where Mehi is going. He hasn't really had a very good time in the DTM, so he might want to come back to the stuff that he really knows. And there's Danny Incandela, who tested Formula One with Williams, so we pretty much know where he's looking. He's obviously a very good driver. He's had a mighty impressive rookie season in the DTM. And there's Pascal Wehrlein, who, after a very, very good rookie year last year in the F3 Euro Series, where he finished second, has been rather unexpectedly recruited in the DTM. And it was almost without much preparation, so he has struggled somewhat, but he's been on the pace generally. So it's kind of hard to tell whether he has any inroads back to maybe come back into a certain, like a GP3 series or something like that, or whether he's going to stay the DTM course, because I don't think he's the most funded driver.
Do you think Mercedes is planning to do the same thing with Wehrlein, like with Di Resta?
I think all these guys have the potential to do the same. I just think they need to fight for titles. I think once they start fighting for titles, then I think the opportunities will come. Jungkadeh is a slightly different case, because he's got personal backing from Astana, who have already started sponsoring Williams. And obviously Williams have got Mercedes engines next year. So I'd be surprised if Jungkadeh doesn't have some sort of reserve role with Williams next year, because Williams have said that they've got a couple of people in mind, and it would surprise me if he wasn't one of them.
Yeah. In fact, it's kind of hard to imagine who else could be there. But Jungkadeh, maybe there were some talks of Russian time link, I believe.
Yeah,
for Williams.
Want a link with Williams. I can't remember what from. Oh, there was a link through iSport, wasn't there?
Yes.
And that could work quite well for Sam Bird, who's done well in GP2 this year with Russian time and probably deserves an opportunity in F1 level.
Done well enough to get an F1 shot at the very least.
And could do a competent job as well, because he's really experienced with all that Mercedes testing. Mm-hmm. But he needs some funding for it. And Russian time could possibly provide that if they wanted to put some money into Williams, then it's possible that Bert could get a chance there, because he used to test for Williams.
Indeed.
Some years ago now.
Because you can imagine, they can probably outbid like Bottas, I guess.
Also, I can't see him getting a race seat for next year, because I think it will stay how it is at Williams, but...
Mm-hmm. Or if there's finally some developments over in Venezuela, and something changes for Maldonado's sponsorship. But again, that's quite a ways away, and right now pretty much GP2 remains his ceiling, GP2, and some Formula One testing, but he certainly deserves more than that. Let's talk Sauber. Now, we've talked about Sergei Sirotkin at length, but that's not the only thing to happen to Sauber in regards to junior drivers now, is it?
No, obviously there's been the case of Robin Frenz, the Paul case of Robin Frenz, if you like, where he was signed up as a reserve driver just under 12 months ago, but he didn't get any mileage because he hasn't got any money or any experience, and Sauber need one or the other, or both, is always preferable. And so he's had no opportunity, and they've let him go.
Let's talk about Caterham. Caterham's junior academy has been increasing in size quite a bit recently. I mean, their usual mainstay, and the guy who's stayed them for quite a while now, is Alexander Rossi with his American sponsorship from, was it General Electric?
Yep.
Yeah. And they've taken on a guy from that level, from the GP2 Formula Renault 3.5 level. They've taken on Will Stevens. He's been having a very, very impressive year in 3.5. So he's now been signed into the Caterham squad. But at the same time, it's kind of hard to see what inroads they can get to make next year. I mean, for Stevens, you could maybe see a GP2 move. For Rossi, he maybe stays in GP2 again, but you don't see when a spot's going to be freed up for them, because Caterham already has two rookie drivers, and they say that two rookie drivers is maybe too many rookie drivers, so they're thinking of bringing Kovalainen back. So where their two guys can get a spot in the next few years, it's a bit hard to see, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the initial plan for Rossi this year was to do Friday practices like Bottas did last year, but then the GP2 chance came up and it made sense to have him in there. But next year, yeah, he might just do the Friday thing, particularly with the whole tyres thing. It's going to make it easier for Caterham to do that, so I think they'll like that idea. I don't know what will happen on the driver front, whether Kovalainen will come back or not, but I don't think that will have a bigger impact on Rossi's plans either way. I think he'll just take up a role, whatever happens.
And of course, that's not it for the Caterham Academy. They also have the Malaysian driver, Weiron Tan, over in ProTyre Formula Renault, where he's finished second this year behind title winner Chris Middlehurst, who I believe is more experienced than him, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tan was a rookie.
I think he had a pace advantage over Middlehurst in the second half of the season.
Yeah. And there was a weekend where he won two races and nearly won the third one, but nearly postponed Middlehurst's coronation. But then his car broke down in the third race, denying him a hat trick. But he's certainly impressed. And, you know, there was quite a bit of skepticism from my part, personally, because I've never heard of the guy, and I hear that he is a Caterham junior. You immediately think money, but there is something there. There is the champ is eye-catching. He might do very well for Caterham. And I think he has sponsorship money. I hope, because Caterham like that.
Well, the advantage he brings to Caterham is that he's Malaysian. And I think, you know, Fernandez has always wanted to find a Malaysian.
Oh, that is... I didn't even think of that. And then, of course, the guy who probably we've talked about the most from the Caterham Juniors this year is the almost Formula Renault 2.0 next champion, almost champion, Matt Perry, who has been having, after, I believe, winning the Intercepts last year.
Yeah.
Which since unfolded. That's a shame. But he won that series, and he's moved on to Formula Renault 2.0 next as part of the giant Fortec lineup. And he seems to be well on his way to winning that as well, because he's been able to compete generally on par with the Eurocup guests when they appear in NEC. And from the regulars, he's been the class of the field with Jack Aitken. And this weekend, he's actually doing the Alps series finale with Karinen, which is making, you know, there might be something in that he might do next year, not with Fortick, but with Karinen in the Eurocup.
Yeah, I think Eurocup certainly seems to be the plan, doesn't it?
Yeah, but not we're not sure with which team.
Yeah.
Could be Fortick, could be Karinen, who underperformed this year, but they're proven they're proven title winners in that championship. So maybe Parry will be banking on the fact that this is a one-off year for them. So yeah, he's certainly one to look out for. He's had kind of a muted second half of the season, but that's muted by his standards. So he's still a very exciting driver. That's about it for Caterham, and we have, I believe, one more Formula One team. That would be the Russian, air quotes, squad, Marussia, which has one official team in GP3, and one team that they have ties with, but they don't like share the name with or anything in GP2. That would be Russia Manor in GP3 and the Carlin team in GP2. Now, what do you guys think about the drivers in those teams?
Well, the most obvious driver they're linked with is Tio Elenas in the GP3 team. He started as a season favourite and as pre-season favourite, and he led the first part of the season. Unfortunately, things haven't gone his way in the second half of the season, but he remains a very talented driver. He made his F1 test debut with Marussia at Silverstone. And I'd like to think they've got long-term plans for him, but budget is obviously an issue. And for a guy from Cyprus, it's not easy to find the budget. So hopefully Marussia will give him a chance at another level. But it's difficult to expect that of a team who are struggling with their own Formula 1 budget, but we'll see. And in GP2, yeah, they've got links with Carlin. Both Nasser and Palmer are drivers who could take advantage of that link. Nasser's certainly looking at Formula 1 this year, and he's got lots of sponsors. And
I think Nasser is actually... The problem for Marussia would be that Nasser, I don't think he's looking for a back-market drive. He's rather ambitious, and he has backing to afford, you know, jump straight into the midfield. At least at some point, maybe not even this year. But it's certainly not outlandish. With Palmer, it's like, is he ready? I mean, certainly both of them would not be outlandish with Marussia, but would Jolyon Palmer be ready, and does he have the backing to come in?
He's probably not got backing on the same level as Max Chilton, so I can't see an immediate opportunity, but there might be some sort of tie-up he can have as a reserve driver or something.
Yeah, that is true.
Right, so we've gone through all of the Formula 1 teams worth going through. So we'll look at something different, the Racing Steps Foundation, who've been backing a number of talented drivers for a few years now. British drivers, that's how it goes. And they've produced... Well, the first driver they produced was Oliver Turvey, who's been McLaren tester, but unfortunately that's as far as he got to go. James Calado's looking like he's going to have a much better opportunity at an F1 race seat. He's now doing Fridays for Force India. Who seem to be quite impressed with them.
Yeah, Force India, I think they liked what they saw during the test, and now he's getting more and more Friday practice opportunities. Maybe not. He's targeting a 2014 race seat, but who isn't? So, and he's not been very well funded historically, but he might score it. He might have, you know, a year of Friday practice running and then get one in 2015. But things are looking up for Galato.
Yeah, I think if a vacancy comes up at Force India because Sauber takes a till or something, then I think he might stand a chance. I don't think he'll be pushing either of the current drivers out of the way, though. I think he'll stay doing Fridays next year. And then they'll promote him the year after, like they've done with Dresta and Hülkenberg, and didn't do with Bianchi. They've also got Jack Harvey, who's sort of the next man in GP3. He's had a good first season in GP3.
Yeah, it's been rather impressive in that you wouldn't say by his early testing form that he'd be up there in contention for, you know, race wins and stuff. I think he already has 2 race victories, which in this year of GP3 is quite a lot.
Yeah, pretty good guy.
And so maybe it's a bit too early for him to move to the GP2 level just yet. Maybe like another year in GP3 would make sense. But he's certainly he wouldn't do badly in either of them. And he's, I think, after maybe a bit of a muted 2011, I believe, in British Formula 3. He's won the title last year. He's looking good in GP3 this year. So he might be one to really watch out for over the next few years. Well, and going from GP3 and sort of the same level, they have two people in the Euro Cup. They have Oliver Rowland, who is spending his second year in the category. And they have Jake Dennis, who is the reigning Formula Renault 2.0 NEC champion, who is doing his first year of Euro Cup. They're both extremely competent. Roland is still very much in the title fight ahead of the final round. And Dennis, I believe, despite only having just now scored his first podium this year, I believe he's fourth in the standings.
Yes.
So both have been very, very impressive and will make some... They deserve to be sponsored by RSF, obviously, and they should make some major moves next year in the transfer market. I think Roland might move up to 3.5. And I think Dennis could be moving to European F3, judging by what's been going on. Not sure with which team, but... apart from them, they have anybody else?
They've got some drivers in co-op. They're led by Ben Barnicot, who's also one of the McLaren drivers. And he will do cars next year, I think. It looks fairly certain. I don't know which championship yet, but he'll be one worth watching when he comes up.
Yeah, we're hoping that he might end up doing the Pro Tyre Winter Series, also known as the Autumn Cup. And then there's the All-Road Management squad that we wanted to talk about. That's led by Nicholas Todd, and it has three Formula One drivers in its ranks, but also has, I believe at this point, two drivers who are not in Formula One. It has James Calado, who is not just sponsored by Racing Steps anymore. He now has management by Nicholas Stodden that has boosted his chances with Force India, I believe. And who else do they have?
Leclerc.
Oh yeah, they have a karting prodigy Leclerc, who isn't actually in junior single seaters yet. And they had French F4 champion Alex Baron at the beginning of the year in the Euro Cup in the ART junior team, but apparently they've parted ways with him after a rather muted first season in the Euro Cup, so now he's lost a seat. Might have been a little premature, actually, in my personal opinion. Because other French F4 drivers have made a better step up than Baron. But, like, right now he's doing some Road to Indy, USF 2000... without much in the way of preparation, and he's been looking very, very competent there. So I suspect they might have jumped the gun on that decision a bit, but they probably know better.
And that concludes our brief look through some of the F1 Junior programs and some other backers as well. We'll hopefully be back in the next few weeks with another podcast. See you then.
Ciao.
Bye.